Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. If you are an animal lover, which I know you are, I am, and it's not just dogs or cats, it's all kinds of animals. Well, my guest today, we're going to be sharing some of the things that she has discovered through her own personal research, but also through experiences with other people. We're going to be talking about animal voices. My guest is Dawn Baumann-Brunke. And Dawn is a freelance writer and editor. In fact, I have in front of me one of her magazines. She's in Alaska. She is the editor of Alaska Wellness, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful magazine. But she's involved in all kinds of areas, not just animals, but anything that has to do with the well-being of people and also of life on the planet in general. Donna, I want to welcome you to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for that very nice introduction.
You're more than welcome. Now, you're in Wasilla, Alaska, and that's not out in the boonies anymore. That's becoming citified.
It's on the national radar screen. That's correct. Or it was.
I can remember being out in that part of the world because Alaska has been like a second home to me. I can remember being out in Wasilla when it was snowing and raining at the same time. There was ice formation. There was slush. I felt like I was in La La Land with the weatherman.
Yeah.
It was incredible, but there was one small restaurant. We did a remote broadcast there, and it had a small hotel type of arrangement where you had rooms upstairs you could get into if you needed a place to stay. And the only other place in town for that kind of accommodation, which was really high class, was Lake Lucille, the best western, Lake Lucille. So I did broadcast to both of those two people, and we had people that came in from 250 miles away to be a part of the audience.
Wow, quite exciting.
So I've got some very fond memories of Wasilla. Let's talk about animals. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
You wrote this book, Animal Voices, because you have experienced firsthand yourself about telepathic communication between animals and people. And obviously they have it among each other, but it is something that it wasn't until really, I think, the 60s that this began to be an area explored. And I'm trying to think of the gentleman right off the top of my head who was really big into it.
You're probably thinking of J. Allen Boone.
No, it's another man.
Hmm.
That was an intense researcher, but J. Allen Boone is one, but this is another man.
Are you thinking of John Lilly?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he was more with dolphins, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially, and that's what you've got on your
cover. I do have dolphins on my cover, Well, J. Allen Boone was actually a very interesting person in terms of animal communication, and he was a Washington correspondent back in the 40s and 50s, and he kind of wrote the first book of the modern era about telepathic communication with animals.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, he's kind of the grandfather of the modern animal communication movement.
Now, what caused you to get involved with this? I mean, I know you have such a passion for life, but when it came to animals, what was the first experience you had that made you think that you wanted to know more about this particular area of interest?
Right. Well, I had always been really close with dogs, especially, and with animals, grew up loving animals, and just felt very close to the natural world. It was actually the writing of this book which got me involved into it. When I first came to Alaska, I became editor of Alaska Wellness, and one of the articles that was submitted was from a woman in Anchorage who talked with animals. And it was a fascinating article, and I kind of pleaded with the publisher to do an interview with her, and I did, and I found her very articulate, very grounded, very interesting kind of person who actually turned me on to J. Allen Boone. And that was when I first started reading about this, and who knew there are people called animal communicators? You know, I had never heard of that before. This is back in the 1990s, around mid-90s. And so I became really fascinated by it. And at the time, I was editing as well as writing articles for various magazines. And so I did a few articles by interviewing animal communicators. And I was just really fascinated by the idea of if animals can really connect with us and communicate us, what would they have to tell humans? So that was kind of my question that I asked a lot of different professional animal communicators, and it was one of those things that kind of snowballed, you know, and I'd done probably 5 or 6 articles, and I realized, wow, I have a lot of information here, and I realized really what I was doing was writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in the course of writing the book, really as a journalist, that I began having these experiences of kind of simultaneous or suddenly, spontaneously opening up to animals, especially my dogs. And actually, my first incident was some birds that came to the bush outside my window. And I began to understand what these animal communicators had been telling me all along, which is that there is a kind of this universal language that pervades nature. And it's something that we are able to tune into if we just allow ourselves to listen. And so that was kind of what got me started on the experiential level of that. And simultaneously, I was interviewing a lot of communicators and a lot of animals through communicators. So as you note, that book, Animal Voices, isn't just about how to do animal communication, but it's all the questions that you might be interested in asking animals and hearing from them if you have that two-way communication system open.
Yes, and you have so many different perspectives in this book relating to animals, including, you know, why animals eat each other. There are people that have said, this, whoever put this world together really had to be one mean son of a gun, because you watch nature in action and it's eat or be eaten.
Right.
When you are watching fish or you're watching worms or you're watching various kinds of insects or super predators like ourselves. And we are predators. We are part of the animal kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a detachment often that people will have, and it sometimes is a very fine line. So a lot of what you have in your book are perceptions that have been given that I think can make us more aware that it's not such a bad thing, that things are the way they are. It's understanding the rhythm. And the
It's understanding the rhythm, and it's understanding or it's perceiving the world without a lot of our own baggage, without a lot of our own projections and judgments. And, I mean, for example, I did purposely want to look into some of the deeper, harder, darker questions, such as, you know, the predator-prey relationship. And it really became explained to me through a lot of different animals, through cats and lions and other animals, that it's a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and it really reshaped my whole view of looking at it. You know, humans, we tend to distance ourselves from what we eat. You know, you go to the grocery store and things are wrapped up in neat little packages. But that's not really how it is, you know, in nature.
Right.
And so I think because we've distanced ourselves so much, we have a lot of shadowy projections that we don't really want to look at where our food comes from.
Well, not only that, we don't want to look at the reality of the way animals truly live.
Right.
It is a romanticization that I think has been often given empowerment, but if you had to really deal with it, it's like our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my grandmother used to have to twist the neck off of a chicken for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Now,
you say that to somebody today, and they just go, oh, that's gross.
Right.
Again,
right.
Because we have sanitized so much of it.
Right, exactly.
And
exactly so.
There are many things that until you have lived in the reality of life, you just don't understand the interaction, the connections. There are so many things that go on, and it's very easy to disassociate from it. I like what you have right at the beginning of your book. You have a wonderful, I'll call it a poem, by the Netsilik Eskimo.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in the very earliest time when both people and animals lived on Earth. A person could become an animal if he wanted to, and an animal could become a human being. Sometimes they were people and sometimes animals, and there was no difference. All spoke the same language. Now, you go back into a lot of cultures, old cultures, Indian, East Indian, American Indian. You have so many of them. These are legends that have been passed down. There is this relationship. leadership that we need to honor and we need to respect. It is something that when once a person has that, you never go back. It mm-hmm. totally changes mm-hmm. the way that you look at life. I want to address something we've just been talking about, and that's animals eating animals. Mm-hmm. Let's go into that. That's chapter 23 in your book, mm-hmm. The Predator-Prey Relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And there is quite a bit that you give to this story, that when you bring it out, it is to you important, for example, that we have free range, you know, if possible, you know, whatever we do, be aware of what we, how we take care of our animals, what
right,
we
exactly.
do.
Right. It's the intent, I think, that's the key there, yeah.
And that is so very, very foreign. You're not against eating meat. You're just saying these are things we need to be aware of.
Right, yeah.
Because
yeah.
we're all interconnected. What we eat is what we become. But talk about the animals themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We see it on all of these nature shows. We will see animals being stalked. We are aware many times with many of these animals, they're old or sometimes they're injured. And that's one of the reasons why they're taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyone that's worked with animals will, out in the wild especially, talk about how valuable the wolf is,
mm-hmm.
how areas where they had been totally removed, the deer, the other creatures became sicker. They
mm-hmm.
were not healthy. They weren't hardy. So nature has a way for what we perceive as being extreme violence. There is a balancing act that's going on here
mm-hmm.
that is ensuring that the healthiest ones do survive.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say it is. It's very much, I think, about balance and about a movement, you know, of keeping an area healthy. And, yeah, I think there are extremes like that that go on that do balance a particular area of land and keep it healthy for the highest, you know, basically the highest good of all beings that share that space of land.
You have a chapter on miracle and manifestation made real. Now, the Lakota Sioux.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the legend of the Lakota Sioux.
The legend of Miracle, the white buffalo?
Yes.
Yeah, it's an interesting. In fact, I was living in Wisconsin at the time when Miracle, which is an all-white buffalo calf, was born. And it's an old legend about it. I have the whole legend in the book. It's kind of there's a lot of little parts to it. But
mm-hmm.
the basic legend was that white buffalo calf woman came to help the Sioux through, or you know, these groups of Indians through a very dry period of time. There wasn't anything to eat. There were no buffaloes, and she came basically to bring balance. Really, you know, she spoke to the men folk, she spoke to the children, she spoke to the women, and she passed around a particular peace pipe to bring a sense, I think, of deeper communication with the animals, with the land, with the humans, and to restore that. And she spoke also about coming again. And the kind of the legend goes on about the coming again as bringing all people of different races together in a state of balance, in a state of peace, so that we could all learn from one another. And kind of there was an underlying theme there is that each people held part of the puzzle or part of the myth.
Mm-hmm.
And the coming together of that, signified by the birth of the white buffalo calf, which is white buffalo calf woman, you know, in spirit, is the bringing together of those pieces of the puzzle, and so that all people can share their truths, and I think it's share their authenticity, and bring a more of a sense of wholeness to the land and a sense of peace as well. So it's a very significant
yeah.
legend.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That the representation to the Native Americans, to me, was very significant, and I know there are many of us that have seen programs about this, because
mm-hmm.
this is so rare to have a white buffalo, and
mm-hmm.
it's considered big medicine, powerful medicine
yeah.
by the Native American. But if you were to see it as a full-grown buffalo, it's no longer white. You
right,
know,
right,
it,
right.
It
right. The buffalo went through the different changes of
the
color.
Four colors,
that's right.
right.
That's right.
Which was so fascinating
yeah.
to have that portrayal come in. And again, it's just a phenomena that it's as if Mother Nature is talking to us, and so everyone has, by observing this, they feel like there is a great hope, even though they feel that there are some difficulties we're going to be going through prior to being able to recognize
right.
the harmony and balance that this wonderful phenomena really is representing.
Right.
Let's talk about the dolphins and the whales. They are so loved by people. Absolutely loved. I mean, one of the most exciting events a friend of mine had was swimming with the dolphins. She said that it was, and this was in Hawaii. She just absolutely was ecstatic over the whole experience. And I can imagine. It's absolutely awesome. These are exceptionally intelligent creatures. And they are just amazing. They have a language of their own.
Mm-hmm.
They live in a world that's tremendously expansive. And yet, here we are at this time in human history, which I think we're in the process of reversing. But right now, it's a very critical time because
mm-hmm.
their world has become very, very contaminated in many parts of the deep blue that we have. And so there's an awareness that if we contaminate what we've got, we're going to have major problems.
Mm-hmm.
You have these wonderful dialogues with people and their experiences with the dolphins. Which is your favorite?
Which is my favorite? I don't know that I have a favorite, but I do remember during the period of writing this that there were certain people, and the two main people I talked to were a woman named Elizabeth Fortune, who's in Florida, I believe, and Joan Ocean, who's in Hawaii, who's written several books. And both of them, I thought of them as dolphin people because they almost had this dolphin energy about them when I spoke to them. And I think you're right. The dolphins are very much about joy and about bringing a sense of, we could call it higher vibration or some kind of elevation in vibration to the planet and to the humans that go, you know, to swim with them, or even through dreams. Both of these women spoke about being initiated into the world of dolphins through the dream world to begin with, that they were kind of called to this. And there's so many different stories here that are associated with it, but I will just say that I read an article yesterday in a scientific magazine about studies that were done of teenagers who were brought to swim with dolphins, and they measured their I'm not really a scientist, so I don't know the correct way to say it, but basically electricity within the body or energy within the body, and it was actually amped up by that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other studies, too, about how just being with dolphins or near dolphins, there's this elevation of energy. And I did go out, actually, to Hawaii and swam with some of the dolphins with a group and with Joan Ocean. And there is a definite quality of, you know, just joy and bliss that comes from being in their presence. They're incredibly joyful creatures. And I think that's one of the main medicines they bring to the planet is this sense of joy and happiness, but at the same time, I think a deeper sense of almost reconnecting humans with their own inner joy. You know, it's not just a quick fix symptom type thing. It's a deeper reconnection with really who we are as human beings, especially
mm-hmm.
that corresponds to joy and to a sense of great love for the planet.
There are a number of different animals that you talk about in your book, Animal
mm-hmm.
Voices. One of them is the llama, which I think is one of the most exquisite creatures.
Mm.
If ever you've seen them, and I know you have, whenever anyone can be up close with them, yes, I know they have the temperament where they'll spit at you periodically.
Yeah.
If they have a way of letting you know they're not happy with you if they don't like you. But there is a grace and an elegance about the llamas, and of course they have been so absolutely vital to the people, you know, that live in the high Andes. They're a phenomenal contributor to the culture on so many levels, just like the American Indian used the buffalo,
mm-hmm.
every bit of the buffalo, so the people in the Andes used every bit of the llama.
Mm.
And it was a vehicle for transporting goods from one place to another.
Mm.
But these are such exquisite creatures. Tell us about the llama and what brought you into that particular perspective of it.
Well, most of the llama talks were done by another woman who was very close with llamas, but it really is interesting that the llamas, and I think it's alluded to at one point in the book in one of the conversations, are almost like the dolphins on land, because they're also very much about balancing peace on the land and holding that. And you know, probably your listeners are familiar with that idea of animal medicine and of holding a particular gift, that each species holds a gift for the planet, which actually speaks back to the white buffalo myth of all of these pieces coming together. The llamas especially, I think, or the conversations in the book, they were very wise, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just held this wisdom that was, and maybe it's because they live in the high altitudes, you know, like the monks kind of, and they associated themselves with the llamas of Tibet, and that there was a connection there. Again, what's fascinating to me in this book is that the different quality of teaching that each animal presents. And there's a different, I wouldn't want to call it a personality because that's such a human term, but a different essence of quality that each animal holds and as a species and how that contributes to a larger mosaic of, you know, the planet Earth, which is also evolving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely true.
Yeah.
And that mosaic is ever-changing.
Ever-changing.
It is never stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is so amazing about the creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many times we underestimate the adaptability of
mm-hmm.
life
mm-hmm.
with these creatures. It is, with some, they are not going to be able to adapt. But with so many that we have today, they have adapted through a lot of scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't even remember.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, their ancestors may go back further than ours.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a number of things throughout your book. There's always this thoughtfulness of message that is given, and it can be by any number of different people. But you had, I think it's more Jean. I couldn't quite read the writing. Jordan, she said, life is not to be thought away. Life is to be lived, experienced, and loved. For the gift it is.
Hmm.
Nothing is more precious than this moment, so do not let it slip away unnoticed. As you savor its richness, you might just discover the real meaning of life.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those are words of wisdom. Being present,
mm-hmm.
being mindfully present, is something that really is a discipline. It's
mm-hmm.
not easy because so often we are trained and indoctrinated that we're supposed to be going 10,000 miles an hour and always look way, way ahead to try to figure out what it is that you should be doing or where you should be going. Now, there's an advantage to that a little bit. But if you don't take care of the moment you're in, what you're looking towards may not have a chance of even coming into birth.
Right.
So
right.
being mindfully present is very important.
Well, and I think that's one thing animals can teach us as a whole. You know, humans, we drive ourselves crazy with our mind chatter. And animals, I think, in general, are just very present and very attuned to the moment at hand. You know, if you live with dogs and cats, you can definitely learn that every single day.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All I have to do is get my two Scottish Terriers out, tell them we're going for a walk. Boing! I mean, everything shifts.
That's yeah, right.
I have to spell the word. I don't dare say it. If I say it, I have a response. It's instantaneous. And when they go out that front door or they go outside the car, wherever they are, it's like, this is it.
Yeah.
I've got. I mean, they're right here, right now.
Right here, right now. There
and
you go.
They're not worried about whether or not they're going to be out for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or anything else. It's just, let's
right.
do it. Let's
and they're not worried how they look or what kind of house they live in or how much money they have or da-da-da-da-da. You know what I mean? It's just, it's all of that baggage is not present. And I think that helps an immense amount, too. And we can just let go of that kind of heaviness that we carry around. I remember there was one animal who said something really funny about, I think it was a dolphin, in fact, who alluded to, you know, I don't carry a big bag of shells around with me, which
mm-hmm.
made me laugh really hard because it's what we do, you know, as humans. We have a very big bag that we carry around with us. And animals don't have that, and that's definitely something we can learn. But you're right, we've been so entrenched in the other that it's difficult. It's difficult to learn, too.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you about how animals look, and it makes a difference to them, and I'll tell you why. I've known cats that if they do not feel they really look good, it's like, don't bother me. I mean, I've been around enough animals. I've had some experiences with them, but it's like, wait until I'm ready.
Yeah, well, and maybe with show dogs, too, or show animals. I think you are
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
I would, you know, I concede to that exception, yeah.
Oh, yes, and I've
yeah,
seen
definitely.
It. And it's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's like they'll say, excuse me, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
And then I'm, you know, it's hysterical. It really is. But I've seen it more with cats than I have with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But with dogs, I know, boy, when they're finished with their grooming, they're strutting their stuff, and then they go out and roll in the mud 5 minutes later, and you go, oh, wow, this is really great. I spent all this money on having you cleaned up, and you go out and you roll in a bunch of salmon or something. Can't you tell me why? Yeah, it smells good.
All that good perfume, right?
Tell us, when you started studying about how to communicate with animals, what were some of the techniques that you were taught? What were you made aware of that made this so important to you?
Yeah, I was, you know, and I had a little unusual thing here because I never really went to a workshop or was taught this in any orderly fashion. I really had my own experiences spontaneously, and so I kind of learned in my own way. But I think that during the course of writing this book, I had asked so many communicators, you know, what's the trick or how do you do it? Or, you know, I was very just curious about how it worked. And I think the best responses I got were, look, it's not about doing anything. It's about being.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being quiet. It's about letting go. It's just about listening and opening your heart or opening your mind or whatever you want to open, you know, and engaging in a deeper form of relationship. And I really think that is the secret. I mean, I don't think we need all kinds of books and workshops and stuff. It really is just a quieting down of our chitter-chatter and an opening with a heartfelt, I think, intent and desire to connect.
I'm going to share with you a fishy story,
mm-hmm.
a true fishy story. A friend of mine, who is one of the most logical human beings ever walking on this planet, she would be what you'd call a bean counter. I mean, she notes every detail. She could not have a dog or a pet, so she decided she'd get one of the fish, the fighting fish.
A betta fish.
A betta fish.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets this fish. It's exquisitely gorgeous. I mean, absolutely magnificent colors, as any of us who have seen them observe. This fish responded to her, and she said, I would never have believed that I'd end up talking to a fish.
Mm-hmm.
But she did.
Mm-hmm.
This fish would greet her when she came home.
Mm-hmm.
She found that it had its own way of communicating with her.
Mm-hmm.
She put it in a place where there was the visibility where it could see her at all times.
Mm-hmm.
That fish, I forget how long it lived, but it lived for a long time. Longer than expected.
I just had
goldfish who did the same thing.
Yeah, can I just interject here? Because
sure.
I also have a little blue betta who lives in my office, and I totally understand what she's saying, because every morning I come down and that fish, it doesn't matter if I turn on the light or not. He comes up to me, he looks at me, and I just started talking. He was bright, kind of cuddled down at the bottom of underneath the plant, and I just turned and I started talking about the bait, and he came right up to the surface and looked.
Mm-hmm.
He's just looking right now. And I agree. I think it's just, you know, as soon as we let go of our ideas of limitations of what animals can or cannot do, that's when we open to the deeper relationship.
That's
when we open to what is.
That is so special.
Yeah.
And anyone that's ever worked with animals, that's done any kind of therapy work, if they have therapy animals that they take in to elderly, you know, facilities,
mm-hmm.
or to hospitals, it can be a pony, it can be a dog, it can be a cat, it can be a bunny, it can be a hamster, it can be a ferret. I mean, there is this relationship that
right.
is so healing. It's
right.
so wonderful. It brings
yeah.
smiles to people's faces. It is a part of life that we should honor and we should respect. In your book, Animal Voices, does exactly that, Dawn. What is your website that people can go to?
Yeah, my website is www.animalvoices.net.
Animalvoices.net.
Right, and there's a lot of chapter excerpts there from Animal Voices as well as from some of my other books.
Mm-hmm.
And articles and all kinds of stuff.
Well, Dawn, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. I look forward to the time when I have a chance to meet you when I'm up in Alaska. We're going to be missing each other this trip that's coming up, but that's okay.
Thanks for having me. It was great fun.
Yes, it's delightful.
Okay.
And good luck to you on your Alaskan Wellness Magazine.
Thanks.
This is Dawn Acebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't forget, Animal Voices, animalvoices.net. Animal Voices is the name of Dawn's book. Her last name is spelled Brunke, B-R-U-N. K-E. Go check it out. If you love animals like I do, this is something I know you will enjoy. Dawn Acebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Lots of good things to share, so don't go away.
Join us
at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, February 13th through 16th at the LAX Hilton, 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles. We are bringing together cutting-edge speakers including David Icke, Sonia Hoquette, celebrity and musician David Carradine, Danyon Brinkley, George Norrie, Sean David Morton, Vashali, and many more. Visit www.consciouslifeexpo.com or call the box office 800-367-5777 for discounted tickets.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTemp Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories, you'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Donna Sebo, telephone lines are now open, and you are invited to call in and chat if you'd like to do so. Here are the toll-free telephone numbers. Our worldwide number for anywhere in the world, as well as the United States, is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, U.S. only, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And I wanted to say all you need to do is give me your first name or initial. That's it. And then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you might have on your mind. It can be about anybody or anything. There's no such thing as a stupid question. So if you would like to chat with me today, this is a good time to do it again. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Now, I want to follow up and remind those of you that are in the Los Angeles area, I'm going to be appearing at the Conscious Life Expo. I'm going to be speaking on Friday evening, Friday the 13th of February, and I will also be in a booth 537, and I'll be available for many consultations while I'm there. So do come by, say hello. I'd be delighted to meet you. Also, I want to say to you, keep a pad of paper handy and a pen. You know, I promised you before Super Bowl Sunday, which I didn't make it because the phone lines are so busy, but I promised that I would give you a recipe for a giant pesto hero sandwich. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes when you're having a group of people over, and this would have been great for the Super Bowl, but I never managed to get it out to you. So I'm going to give it out to you anyway, because if you want to have a bunch of people over, and especially if you're going to be having a bunch of young people, their appetites are through the roof. So this is something that's hearty. It is something that you can be very versatile with. I'm going to give you selected ingredients with this particular recipe, but it really is something that can save you from having to do too much of a rush at the last minute. After all, if you're like me, you've got a lot of things going on, and sometimes you don't have a heck of a lot of time to even run to the store. So if you have some time for preparation, you can do this in advance, and it'll be all ready. In fact, why don't I just go ahead and give you this information? It's real simple, and if you don't like any of the ingredients, swap it with something else. So what you're going to need is a half a cup of bottled oil and vinegar vinaigrette salad dressing, your favorite, whatever it is. Make up your own if you like, but you're going to need about a half a cup. And then you want 2 tablespoons of prepared pesto. Again, if you're one of these people that has a lot of time, you can go ahead and make your own. You're going to need 1 long loaf of crusty Italian bread. You want to cut that in half. I prefer sourdough, but you can use whatever you want. Just make sure you got a nice long loaf of crusty Italian bread or whatever is your favorite. You need 2 roasted red bell peppers from a jar, 2 roasted red peppers from a jar, and you want to drain them. You want to make sure that they're fairly dry. You want 6 romaine lettuce leaves. You want to tear them up into pieces. And you want 6 ounces of deli-sliced roast turkey, equal amount of deli-sliced Genoa salami, and then 4 ounces of deli-sliced provolone cheese. And then you've got 3 plum tomatoes, thinly sliced. Thinner the better. You know, watch when you go to any of these sandwich shops, you'll find those tomatoes are almost like wafer thin. One of the reasons that is very effective is you don't get a real soggy sandwich. Anyway, and some, you know, pimento stuffed green olives, if you like. Again, you can do this. There's so many different things you can do with it. Now, what you do, you whisk together your pesto and your dressing. Now, your cut bread, you want to drizzle this over the sides of your bread, and you want to cut the red peppers into 2-inch wide strips. Place half of the lettuce over the bottom bread half. Now, remember, if you have it shredded or cut, you know, where it's in smaller pieces, it's going to stay better than just a straight romaine leaf. So you want to shred it sort of finely. And then you put your peppers on top of the lettuce, top with your turkey, your salami, your cheese, your tomato, and then a little bit more lettuce, and then cover it with the other top of the bread, which has also got some of the dressing on it. And then you wrap it very tightly with plastic wrap, and you refrigerate it 3 hours before you serve. And you can garnish with olives. Now, again, remember, you want the tomato sliced really, really thinly. And something that I have found works, if you don't want to end up getting a soggy sandwich, is it depends on the tomato and how meaty the tomato is. Sometimes when you slice them, you'll find that there is a lot of seed, etc. Well, if you remove the pulp of the seed, and you can save it for something else if you want, but you remove that, you're going to take a lot of the wetness out, and then that way your sandwich will not get soggy. But remember, you put those tomatoes not up against the bread. You put it between the salad and the meat or cheese, and then that way it's not going to get real soggy, but again, real thinly sliced. And then you've got some olives you can put on there, but you can mix all kinds of different types of meat for this, different types of cheeses, and it's wonderful. You can make this up, and you know, you would do it with roast beef, you can do it with pork, you can do it with chicken, whatever. Your imagination is absolutely unlimited. But this is a good thing to do. And if you don't necessarily want a vinaigrette dressing, try different mustards. Do different things. And it can be something that when you make it up and you put it in the fridge for 3 hours, and when you bring it out, all you have to do is then cut it into portions, and then people take what they want. And it really is great. You have some, you know, different complements, condiments to go with it. You can have chips. You can have whatever you want to have. And it's easy, it's fun, everybody has a good time. If you're playing games, it's easy to handle, and it's easy cleanup afterwards. So it's a great thing to have, and I just wanted to share that with you today because it's really fun to do things like that. Now, for those of you, and if you want to give me a buzz, go ahead and do that, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. So many people are out looking for jobs. Here in the Seattle area, the job fair has been going on, and the day of the job fair, before they even opened the doors, they had partitioned off areas, blocks of areas. This was yesterday. Over 1,000 people were standing in line for that job fair before the doors opened. Now, I cannot recall that occurring with any job fair, and they have it every year. They actually have a few of them here in the Western Washington area every year, and it's because of a lot of people that have been laid off from work. A lot of people here in the state of Washington have gotten pink slips. So they're out looking for opportunities. Now, one of the comments that was made by a talk show host that I was listening to as I was driving around doing errands yesterday was there were some big companies that had laid off like 6,000 people that they were hiring. Why had these layoffs occurred? Well, this company, this one particular company, which is all over the nation, they had laid off a large group of people within a certain section of the company. That section of the company was no longer needed. It did not have a good profit margin, but more than that, they were able to absorb it into other areas of the company structure. So the section where many of these people were laid off from throughout the country, it was, again, obsolete. What can you do? What can you do to be able to fit into a marketplace that is changing very quickly? Well, something you might want to consider is checking out apprenticeship programs, and I don't care what your age is. If you have areas of interest that maybe you've wanted to explore, if you're wanting to make a change into a whole different venue, don't be afraid to check things out. Now, here are some steps you can take. These were brought to my attention, and I wanted to share them with you. If you would like to find out about apprenticeship programs, and sometimes they're offered by small businesses, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Contact the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Apprenticeship Training. And this is their website. And I'll spell it out for you. It's DOLETA, D-O-L-E-T-A dot gov forward slash A-T-E-L-S underscore B-A-T forward slash. Let me repeat that. D-O-L-E-T-A dot gov forward slash A-T-E-L-S underscore B-A-T forward slash. Or you can go to your state or local government agency that promote apprenticeship programs. Now, almost all of them will provide useful information about the types of apprenticeships that are available, and they'll even give you suggestions about how you can locate apprenticeship sponsors. Now, this is so valuable. Also, the suggestion was made to contact area vocational schools and community colleges, local unions, employer associations, and ask them if they're involved in any kind of apprenticeship programs. You also can talk with individual companies about their formal or informal apprenticeship program. Now, if you're a young person, this is a very good way for you to go because you may not be able to get a job necessarily with them, with a company, but maybe you can volunteer to work with them so that you gain work experience, and if they have an apprenticeship program and you are going to school and taking courses that are complementary to what their industry needs, you've got a win-win. So this is something that's invaluable. Also, you need to check whether an apprenticeship program offers recognized standards and credentials, which will indicate if it will have value for you. So you want to know about safety, quality, and skill attainment considerations. Also, can the program be custom designed to meet your company's particular needs? Now, you can choose a program, whether it is an established program or not, and I'm going to take a break right now. When I come back, I'm going to finish giving you the rest of the suggestions I was given. I think this is terrific. I really do. We're in a massive time of change. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could apprentice yourself in some way so that you could be a part of the flow instead of battling against the current of change? Move with it. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Remember, you can give me a call if you like, 877-876-5227 or 888-815. 9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. Interested in UFOs, the paranormal, predictions, prophecies, and psychics? Then join us along with David Icke, Sean David Morton, Jim Mars, Richard Hoagland, Danyon Brinkley, Sonia Coquette, and many more at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo and Film Festival, February 13th to 16th at the LAX Hilton. Call the box office at 1-800-367-5777 or visit ConsciousLifeExpo.com for more information and discounted tickets.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I was talking about an apprenticeship program. Also, I wanted to follow through that when you're choosing a program, whether it is well-established with a company or with a state organization, or maybe one you're trying to develop yourself, you want to have a real standard for whatever you're expecting the apprentice to accomplish. You're going to be a mentor, and if you're an employer, this is something that's very, very significant. And a written agreement might be very, very good because it will, if you're an employer and you're going to be utilizing this with people, then it is going to enable you to have that standard of expectation which they will have to come up to. Also, many vocational schools working with business people will put this towards class credits. On-the-job training is a very valuable thing, and also pay increases commensurate with skills that are learned if you're an employer can really help that prospective employee. And there's need for a trial period, regular evaluations, and terms for suspending or canceling the program. Also, if you are an employer and you're going to be offering an apprenticeship program, you want to really be sure that you are going to have a good selection process. Before enrolling someone in your apprenticeship program, you first want to observe the individual, maybe having them interact with you for several weeks right on site or maybe for some months. If they are an employee and they're interested in this, if you'd like to see if they can qualify as an employee, this is the time to do that kind of evaluation. Do they have the aptitude, the ambition, and also the perseverance to succeed? And you need to be able to realize that mentoring is so important. And if you're going to be the apprentice, you want to be sure that you have someone that's going to be a good mentor for you, actually maybe even having more than one mentor. I was aware of a gentleman, he actually was a client, And this was a man that worked with a vocational school, and his expertise was that of a blacksmith. Now, you wouldn't think that there'd be much of a need for a blacksmith, but believe you me, there are more blacksmiths in business today than there were even 100 years ago. It takes a great deal of skill and expertise, and many times the blacksmiths are working with horses and with ironwork. There's all kinds of different areas that their skills are needed in. Well, this man not only was a blacksmith, but he was very skilled as a welder. And he was encountering a lot of young men who had an interest in the work that he did. They were fascinated with it. So he went to this vocational school in here, in the local area that I live in, and he said, I am seeing so many young men who are very interested in what I do, and I'd like to know if it's possible for me to do some kind of an apprenticeship program, because it takes a while to learn skills. This is very physical labor, and they have to understand the disciplines. So as it turned out, the vocational college asked him to present a program, and they worked with him. And he had a very specific outline, just like what was suggested a moment ago. They would get so many class credits for participating. They had to work with him for a certain amount of time, and they had to keep their grades up in all of their other classes. So there was a standard for him that he said was going to absolutely be necessary. Their reading skills had to be up because they had to know how to read directions, how to read instructions on various types of equipment, understand safety signs and everything else. They had to have, you know, a C, a minimum of a C. That was the lowest you could go in every course, reading, writing, and arithmetic, basically. And he would take these young people on. They would come into his shop. They had to be there very early in the morning. He would not tolerate tardiness, period. You had to be on your deathbed. If you didn't show up, you were out. So the rules were established right in the beginning. It was amazing how these young men really would commit. Every once in a while, he'd get one that wouldn't. And he'd say, that's fine, it's no problem, but I'm not wasting my time with you. You're going to have to go by the rules. And what he did, he set a standard for them that not only showed them the wonderful opportunities that they had, but also they were very, very well aware of the responsibilities they had and what they had to do. The change in these young people was just phenomenal. Now, a lot of them never ended up becoming a blacksmith. A lot of them did not want to do that. But what they did, they learned disciplines in this apprenticeship program. They got their class credits, and it served them well in many other areas. And as a mentor to these young people, this man felt like he was really doing something of value because he was passing along not only the skills that he knew, but he realized that the disciplines that he was enforcing would stand these young people in good stead no matter what they wanted to do. And to the best of my knowledge, he's still teaching these classes. But he made the commitment. He wasn't making money on this. He just had a fee that just barely covered the cost of whatever needed to be utilized by the students as they were going through the training program. But what it did, it gave a sense of self-esteem and self-sufficiency to those young people. And for those that might be older that want to go through an apprentice program, you already have acquired skills. You already have a level of learning that is going to make your apprenticeship program perhaps even more rewarding to you. So remember, the best investment you can ever make is in yourself and also in exploring different options that maybe you've never, ever had the opportunity to explore. You are worthy of doing this. Do not be afraid of the future. Do not be afraid of the challenges that are coming up every day with these fast-paced changes. There is a place for you. And, yes, you may have to put yourself in a classroom somewhere, but you're going to come out a winner. This is Donna Siebel. I know that we're just about out of time here. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about democracy's big day. And what is that? Well, that's the inaugural day of the president. Jim Bendat is going to be my guest tomorrow. We're going to talk about history. We're going to be talking about all of the different events and conditions that have gone on in this nation that have been of worthy note. And Jim has done a lot of homework on this. So he's going to be my guest. and I hope that you will join us tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is good. Count your blessings. You've got a lot to be grateful for. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.